All right, brothers, let's get it started. First, let me do a slight introduction for anybody who might listen to this in the future. I have myself, Vaughn Edmead. Many of you listening have probably heard tons of my projects before. I always got some sort of project going on. Some of you all have listened to the Averages Failure podcast in the past. We're going to probably be changing the name of this podcast in the near future to the Can't Be Hid podcast. And that is a reference for those who might not know. There's this verse in the Bible that talks about city on a hill can't be hid, you know, and it's talking about let your light so shine before men. And really what we want to do here is to be a light that has impact on, you know, the current world around us, for good, you know, and for the sake of the kingdom and the gospel. So that being said, you know, I won't go into too much detail about me, because at the end of the day, you know, I am who I am. You'll get to know more about me as these podcast series go on. I have with me as well my good, like a big brother to me. His name is Shane Ray Brown, the Jamaican sensation. And Shane, say hello to the people real quick.
Hey. Thanks for inviting me to the Averages Failure. Well, what can't be hit podcast.
Yeah, there you
good
go.
Good to be with you.
What's up, Shane?
Shane is from the island of Jamaica, born and raised, came on over here to the States. Shane is an attorney, a lawyer. I met Shane while in law school, the year of law school that I did. He was successful. I wasn't, but that's neither here nor there. He's been a big brother ever since. You know, he's really been a person that I could talk to when I was in some tough spots, you know, ever since then. And so I'm glad to have him. Very, very thoughtful individual. Everybody who I have, you know, on here, is a thoughtful individual. It takes the time to kind of think through some of the things that they're seeing out there in the world and in their own personal lives, and in hopes to bring value in terms of their critique of those things. And then next we have Paul. So Paul is, interestingly, we got all men on here, black men, but black men who are tied to an island in some way, shape, or form. I myself, my mom's family is from Jamaica. My father's family is from St. Kitts, although I was born in Brooklyn, New York. Paul's family is from Haiti. But I think, Paul, you were born in the States, right?
Yep, born in Brooklyn as well.
All right. So, Paul, introduce yourself, man. Say hello to the people real quick.
Hello, hello, hello. Pleasure to be on. Right.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And Paul is a full-time musician, specialist on the organ, both Hammond gospel organ and classical organ, maestro on the piano. This guy has, won worldwide awards on the piano, has, played significantly high in worldwide competitions on, classical organ. Black individuals tend to be very much a minority in that space, you know, so he's here joining us. As I said, Shane, you know, is on here as a lawyer joining us. Myself, I've probably done a ton of different things. I don't even know how to define myself professionally. I'm just me. I'm a program manager. I would do a lot of work though I'm not a social worker, I do a lot of work in the social work field, working with the underserved population of D.C., especially Southeast D.C. I've also been a pastor. I'm not pastoring a church right now, but I have been a pastor. I still do preach. And so, yeah, that's the context. We all grew up, I think, for the most part, in the Seventh-day Adventist Christian context. And so we're in an interesting time right now, fellas. I guess we can start jumping right on into this, you know, but I kind of wanted people to have a background, somewhat of a backdrop of, you know, what some of our cultural upbringing and how that might inform some of our discussions today. And so we're at an interesting point in Earth's history. 2020 has been quite a year, and we want to talk about some things pertaining to that. In particular, we want to talk about, you know, the social justice issue that just arose. You know, we got COVID-19 going on. We got Kobe Bryant passed away earlier this year. It's just been a mess. And so maybe Shane, I'll have you start kicking us off, man. Let's just start with how has this year made you feel? And what are some of the things that have been on your mind since this incident that happened with this police officer who put his knee on the neck of a black brother named George Floyd? As a matter of fact, his funeral was today. We were watching it for a little bit. What kind of thoughts arose for you? You know, what feelings rose for you? Any critiques about things that are going on right now? Kick us off, man. Start sharing some of your thoughts.
Wow, what a year, right? What a year 2020 has been. You know, I'm not sure what the next year is going to bring, but certainly I think 2020 is going to go down, not only for COVID, but certainly because of what I think will happen will be some amount of reform within police departments, mm-hmm. maybe some amount of abolitioning of the ways we think about policing, mm. Abolishment of some of the ways we think about policing going forward. You know, when COVID started, I think there was palpable fear, particularly amongst black people, as it became evident that black people were dying at disproportionate rates, at higher rates. And there was palpable fears amongst the elders in our communities, mm-hmm. right? The people we look up to, the people who we ask for prayers for and guidance from, our grandmothers and our grandfathers. In fact, the first elder of my church died of COVID.
Wow.
Wow. And he was a gentleman in his 50s.
Wow.
So, at friends, older friends in their 50s who had COVID, and when you called them, they thought they were going to die. Mm. They were talking about writing their wills, you know, trying to leave. You know, for those who didn't have wills, writing, you know, their wishes on pieces of paper. Mm. So COVID, you know, is a dreaded disease. The genesis of it, we don't fully understand. I think we're learning some, you know, within the medical field, learning how to treat it. But it was very, very stressful, I believe, within the black community, particularly in New York. Right, particularly in New York, in Brooklyn, in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. The zip code my church is in the Bronx, has the highest rate of COVID deaths in New York City. Mm-hmm. So you can imagine how that affects a community, right? How that affects how we interact with each other, certainly, but how it affects you in your own home with your family members, with your grandparents, with your parents. My father is here with me. He's a man in his late 60s. And so, you know, I said, you can't go out there. We have to lock you in. Right, we got to lock you in. Now, put on a brave face, but I'm sure he was overly concerned when he was hearing that people his age with underlying conditions were dying at a rapid rate. Mm-hmm. So now when you bring that stressor, the unemployment that followed, right? Significant unemployment, significant debt, because black people, Caribbean people in the Caribbean background, African background, African American background, you know, they are the nurses and the nurses' aides, right? Yeah. They are the the people on in the supermarkets, at tellers, in the banks, or wherever. So they were being exposed. But then you also have a large amount of people were losing jobs. So there's just a lot of stress in the community. And on top of that, now we have on the forefront again visible images of brutality against Black people. And no wonder. There are a number of things I would want to say about that within the COVID context, but just the stressor of that is significant. The pain of that, after months of dying, we're still seeing that the people we would depend on for protection are killing us at rapid rates. I think the protests out of that is another conversation, but what we saw within those moments were Ahmaud Arbery in Georgia running. We learned today that they were chasing him down. They bonked him a number of times with the vehicle. And so when you see him in the last part, decided to turn around and fight, that was because they were taunting him, basically, for a while. And then he decided that he's not going to go down like that. He's going to fight. Then we see a young lady is in her house sleeping in the night, and a no-knock warrant. Policemen kicked down her door and started to fire shots. And she's in her house, her castle, if you will. Her boyfriend was charged, but I think those charges were dropped because people entered his house and he has to defend his family. Where's the NRA with that? Then I think what was very pivotal for me was really the conversation, not the conversation, but the interaction with the Coopers, right? The Lady Cooper, who is in the rubble in the, is it Ramble? The Ramble section in Central Park. Both of their names are Coopers. And
not all,
right? And I think this conversation, this interaction really revealed something to America in like the lady put on an Oscar performance. An Oscar performance, Oscar worthy. Oh, there's an African American man. He's trying to hurt me. Oh, can send the police. Oh, I need help. An Oscar performance. And I think that revealed to America, it peeled away this concept of white woman fragility. It peeled away the thinking behind many white people. And in stark contrast, let the world know that when Black people say they are being discriminated against, this is what it looks like. Believe us. And then now, finally, we come now to George Floyd. And I think that was just like the straw that broke the camel back, the icing on the cake, that really said no to the world. Something is terribly wrong in America. And this is not the America that we hoped it should be for some white people who have been indifferent. Now they have become a little concerned. This is not the America that our founding fathers said it would be. Well, you know, we know different because we don't understand what the founding fathers did to Black people. So, yeah, I just want to leave it there. I want to give Paul a chance.
Okay. Paul, you're up, man. What's been brought up for you, man?
I don't know how to follow up on that, man. That was a no. I mean, that's a perfect encapsulation, really, of the situation right now. I think, for me, I've had a lot of thoughts going through my mind, and I thought this would be a good opportunity just to like talk through and try and be able to articulate, really, what the situation is. But clearly, the world is on fire, man. And, I think, like Shane said, the George Floyd killing the lynching, as many people have been calling it, was kind of the last straw, you know what I mean? And I think everybody's already tired with COVID and all the, you know, all the heightened awareness and quarantine and all that kind of isolation that we've had to deal with, all the millions and millions of jobs lost in the U.S. You know, another 2 million today, reported earlier this morning. You know, the thousands of people who have died, hundreds of thousands. And I just think that people are tired, you know. I think Black people especially are are tired of being treated as really second-class citizens in their own country. We feel like there's no home for us, you know what I mean? Like we're not welcome in our own homes. And we're not safe in our own homes. And so, you know, I've been thinking about it, also trying to think about it in the context of just like spiritual and, you know, theological terms, you know, because we've heard some things, especially as Seventh-day Adventists, you know, we've heard growing up all about the end times, you know, and the tribulations and the trials and all the things that are going to come at the end of time. And, you know, at least for me, it's hard to not wonder, like, you know, are we starting to witness the beginning of the end? You know what I mean? Or is this just like a really crazy, crazy, crazy year? You know what I mean? And even if that is the case, you know, what does that mean for us? You know, how do we continue to approach the situation? How do we, what is our mindset to be? Because I think that also, you know, especially related to these like social justice things and civil rights and all those things, I think as a church, that mentality where we are kind of always looking towards the second coming, kind of heavenly focus, so to speak, I think we've sometimes run the risk and done a disservice by not actually serving and living in the moment to actually meet the needs of the people where they are right now, you know, and trying to actually address the inequalities and address the disparities that people are crying out for, you know, because, and so, did we lose Shane?
he dropped out. Shane. I don't know where he went, but he just disappeared. But I guess he has the link, so he should be able to join back in. when he's good. Yeah, there he goes.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, I mean, those are some of the things, some of the thoughts that I've been kind of wrestling with. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say this has been quite for me, you know, and I want to jump soon into, I think you both have done a great job of, kind of capturing, the zeitgeist, so to speak, the spirit of the age. You know, for me personally, outside of that, you know, on my job, I have been experiencing for the past few months, probably the toughest challenge I've ever faced on a job, and the longest challenge I've ever faced on a job, man. You know, for confidentiality reasons, I can't get into it, but simply imagine being in a situation where, you know, I explain to people all the time, I've called 911 more times in the past 6 months than I have in the rest of my life combined, by far.
Wow.
You know, the COVID-19 has only exasperated that. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate because a lot of the challenges that I experience, you know, I work with basically the Black underserved population in DC. And unfortunately, oftentimes the individuals that I have to call the police on are also Black individuals, you know? Mm-hmm. And so sometimes there's a feeling like I'm trying to fight for Black people in some ways, but also it feels sometimes like the very Black individuals that you want to help sometimes are also putting you in a position where it feels like they're fighting against you, you know, or putting you at risk.
Yeah.
And there's a half of you that you're like, yo, there's some accountability required here. Like, you can't just go around doing that. But at the same time, you're like, it's hard for me to put 100% blame on you because there are also systems that have, you know, that have kind of made it more likely for you to only see your ability to go down a certain kind of path or handle things in a certain way. We talk in my field about, you know, trauma and trauma type responses. And the way trauma works is you begin learning how to survive in a different kind of way than non-traumatized individuals survive. And so when things aren't going your way, or when you feel like you're in a certain type of situation, you immediately respond in the way that you know how to respond, mm-hmm. you know, and unfortunately those ways aren't necessarily healthy. You know, and literally I see whole communities that are, man, that it's just tough to look at, man. You know, you see whole communities, you see whole generations, generation after generation, and it doesn't look like anything's going to change for certain individuals. So then you have that, and then all of a sudden you see what happened to, you know, Mr. Floyd, and it's like it just has your feelings all over the place. But what you guys already articulated the feeling of the moment that we're in. Let's talk a little bit about how do you all see, what do you all think, how important is the gospel of Jesus Christ to this moment? We know that it is important, at least in our opinions, you know, we're all Christians or what have you on this podcast. So we think that it's important. Dare I even say, we think that it's probably the most important thing that might inform how we see ourselves in this moment. And so I'm interested in really helping Black Christians to think about this moment in hopes to inspire our ability to handle this moment, how Paul and how Jesus and, you know, maybe some others would have us to handle this moment. And so I'm interested in hearing you all thoughts on how do you think the Bible, Jesus Christ, Christianity, how do all these things inform how you approach this situation? Oh man, yeah, I left y'all stunned. <huh? laughs> I didn't even think I was asking a deep question, but I'm deeper than I thought I was.
No, I was going to let Shane take the lead. But in terms of that, that's a good question. You know, for me, the gospel informs everything in terms of how I think about things, you know, how I approach situations. And I think ultimately, for me, it always allows me to have a sense of hope, no matter how dark, how daunting, how depressing the current situation is. I don't know if that makes sense, but I just, there's always a sense of like, ultimately God's got it, you know what I'm saying? And mm-hmm. like, yeah, things may be a certain way right now and things may be completely messed up, clearly, but at the end of the day, we know who wins. You know what I'm saying? We know how the story ends. And for me, that always gives me some perspective in terms of, you know, just a sense of peace and a sense of hope. Now, that being said, you know, I think, you know, not to get on the church again, but I think that sometimes we can run the risk of like staying there, you know what I'm saying? And like not actually like putting our feet to the ground and our hands to the plow, so to speak, as it were, and actually doing the work right now that can be done to alleviate the pain and
Paul,
suffering that people are.
Paul, let me ask you then. You brought up something and I want to ask you a little bit more about it. You talked about you know, putting your hand to the plow. What does that look like for you, Paul? Right? We can sometimes talk about that in general terms, what the overall Black community, or specifically what the overall Black Christian community, should be doing, right? But what does that? Oh, it looks like we lost Paul. He should be back soon.
Yeah. Well, you know, when I think about from a
Christian, you go ahead, Shane, till Paul gets back.
Yeah, from a Christian perspective, it's varied. Yes, within the larger context as a Christian, I think about the ultimate justice of God, that God will bring all things into judgment and that God will wipe all tears away. And I think that that's the ultimate goal, that's the ultimate hope I have for life in general, for life on this planet, that there will be a time when we would achieve through the power of God, Jesus Christ as a Christian, the utopian vision, if you will, that heaven speaks of and is, we believe is, and that God ultimately longs to bring us into a communion with him and a communion with each other, fellowship with each other, that is peace. Isaiah said, we're going to study war no more, right? So that place where we study war no more. And so I think that's the larger context that I hold. And I suspect I hold that within a larger understanding of systems of oppression and the theology of devil and antichrists and Christ systems, antichrist systems. But when I started to think about Christianity, while I occupy, as Paul says, right, occupy, while I occupy, I think about my responsibility as a Christian to uphold in the principles of Jesus Christ, my responsibility to the least of these. I reflect on Jesus's statements in Matthew when he said, I was in prison. He didn't visit me. I was hungry. He didn't feed me. I was naked and he didn't clothe me. I think within that concept, and then he says, Lord, when did we see you? The response echoes out. And Jesus says, in as much as you have done it to the least of these, you have done it to me. And I think the challenge for Christianity, especially white evangelical Christianity, but Christianity in general, is whether or not we are to be moved by the gospel to think about the least of these in a way is that repairs the breaches in just of unjust society. And I think so many times we get lost within a theology that looks, you know, towards a future that we don't know. We hope, but we don't know when it's coming, if it's even coming in our lifetime. A Christian always looks for the coming of Jesus as if it will occur in their lifetime. you know, and the Christianity that focused solely on the preaching of the second coming of Jesus Christ, mm-hmm. and miss the responsibility Jesus has given us. Basically, oh, Jesus said he will judge us. Right? Oh, Jesus will determine who is with him. That cannot be left out of the conversation of whether or not you really, really long for righteousness. Rightness, righteousness. Do you really long for righteousness? Hmm. Or you just long to be saved?
See, Shane, come on, Shane. Come on, Shane. You hitting
right.
Right. You hitting us where it hurts.
Right. Do you really want to have the character of God?
Mm.
Or you just want to have the things of God?
Mm.
Right. Mm. So you want to be where God gives you gold streets and, you know, or you want to be in a nice church building comfortably. And or you want to be amongst people who speak like you, you know, they're very, very, very church in their language. They eat like you. They dress like you. You know, you want to be in those spaces that really segregates itself from worldliness. Right? And forget the responsibility of going into the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You want to be saved, but you don't want to be like Jesus.
Hmm.
And I think there is a problem with especially evangelicalism that promotes this sort of a, you know, the political the political what I would consider to be red herrings.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right? So they can hold on to, they can hold on to pro-life, right? Mm-hmm. They can hold on to those things. They can hold on to gay marriage, against gay marriage, or they can hold on to, you know, support for Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And they can hold on to a number of these other things. Mm-hmm. And, but forget that they need to hold on to the things that speak to the least of these, education, that speaks to the least of these, right? Environmental justice and criminal justice reform that speaks to the things that affect real life people, real people like healthcare. And so, but because I can hold on to wanting to be saved. Without wanting to be like Jesus, I can't do that. And I think that is the challenge that I'm not hearing, and even within, you know, the Adventist Church, not hearing that spoken of because we're so focused on, you know, trying to be the remnant. And I'm trying to understand the remnant of what?
Shane, don't, man, Shane, you're about to get us in trouble, brother. You're about to get see. And Paul, I'm still going to come back to you with that question.
Yeah, I got disconnected.
Shane, there's a couple of things that you bring up that I feel like we haven't really sat down and thought about critically. Okay. One thing, for instance, well, let me not say it. Maybe that's too harsh language. People have sat down and thought about these things critically. I take that back. Maybe we haven't really thought about the accuracy, the biblical accuracy of some of these things. If I were to start with, so you talked about the evangelical church, right? And I think Christianity on another front has a challenge as well. Because while on the evangelical front, there's a somewhat of a misuse or a misnomer that individuals are connected to God, you know, because of some of those things that they talk about. My assessment from what I've seen happening in many Black churches, right, across the board, you know, regardless of denomination, is, and funny enough, what's, I actually think that evangelical churches have actually picked up on this and started trying to incorporate it themselves, is what we might call the prosperity gospel. And I'm not using it in this, so I'm not using it in the sense of what, how individuals once used to talk about the prosperity gospel, where it was very much just a thing of, you know, it seemed to be tied to financial blessings. But I think that in many ways, the gospel, the whole Bible has been kind of chopped up and mitigated down to merely, if you're going to church, you know, if you're reading your Bible, if you're doing these things, God is going to bless you in some way, shape, or form. Sometimes what that blessing sounds like or what that blessing is relatively vague, you know, or we hear something about, you know, your time is coming, etc. And I'm not sure that the original hearers of the Bible really would have been thinking or hearing that way, because in many ways, I think that the original hearers of the Bible were often in similar conditions and situations as the oppressed and downtrodden of today. A lot of the individuals, and by all means, not all, but there were a lot of individuals, if you were a Christian or new to this thing called Christianity in the New Testament, you were taking a risk, all right? Because very much Christians, as a matter of fact, were looked at to an extent as atheists, you know, when you get to the New Testament, because they believed in a God that could not be seen. There was no physical representation of this God, unlike many other gods, you know, during that time, of which there were idols for and all this kind of stuff. So I say all of that to say, when I look at some of the teaching, I wonder how much teaching has really prepared Christians for moments like this. Maybe we're not as prepared as we could be, because we haven't really heard the gospel as we should have been hearing it. You know, we maybe have not heard enough of the gospel where Paul talks about the suffering for the gospel's sake, you know, and Paul equating suffering for the sake of the gospel as life, you know, and Paul even talking in many ways about, yeah, you have the authority, or you might have the power, to the point that you were making, Shane. Paul talks all the time about, yeah, you know, the weaker brother and the stronger brother. And you who are the weaker brother, well, don't use your, I'm sorry, you who are the stronger brother, don't use your permission, or don't use your authority, or don't use your license as a means by which to trip up or to offend your weaker brother. You know, and so that also is a critique, going back to what you were saying in many ways, Shane, where thinking about those who are in power, how many of them actually utilize that power in such a way that it helps their neighbor? Or let's take gun rights. You talked about the NRA for a quick second, Shane. I believe I have the power. I'm talking hypothetically. I believe I have the right to use guns, right? But I see that guns are killing communities and populations of my neighbors. And so is it more important for me to fight for my gun rights? Or is it more important that I be a part of trying to figure out how do I, if guns could reduce the harm to my neighbor, am I willing to lay that power down? Am I willing to lay that human right down? Right. And I'm rambling a little bit, man, but you had me exploring some of those themes a little bit. Paul, we were asking you before you got cut off, you know, and Shane, I want to kind of hear that from you as well. What does it look like when the rubber hits the road? What does it look like, Paul, to what should your performance in this moment look like? What do you think you've been called to do? You talked about, us partaking in this moment. You talked about, doing the work. What does the work look like for Paul at this time?
Yeah. Man, those are good, really, really good thoughts, man. So there's a couple of things. One, in response to your thoughts, like ultimately the gospel is very simple. You know, you can boil it down as Jesus did to two commandments: to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love your neighbor yourself, you know. And what that simply requires is like an abundance of selflessness, you know what I mean? And it's such a simple concept, but it's, you know, unfortunately it's incredibly deficient in so many of us. And I mean, in most of us, really. I mean, we are raised as kind of selfish creatures. We were born selfish creatures. And so we have to learn to be selfless. We have to learn to, like, give of ourselves willingly. And that kind of goes against the American ethos, in a sense, like the entire capitalistic model of America is really about, like, what can I do as much to build up myself, you know? How can I gain as much money, as much whatever, influence, power, fame, whatever the case might be, but how do I gain as much as I can?
Acres and a mule.
Right, right. You know, how do I gain as much as I can? The American dream.
Oh, sorry, so no, my bad. 40 acres and a mule is not what I meant. I meant to say, what's the other one? What is it, like 2.3 kids, a house, a white picket fence?
Right. Yeah, like the ideal, the dream family, yeah. White picket fence, yeah.
40 acres and a mule is reparation, my bad.
Right. You know what I mean? And so, for me, like right now, you know, I'm honestly really thinking hard about that question. Like, what is it, especially in light of all these 2020 occurrences, you know, the realities, the new realities that we have? Because I had a plan in mind, but right now, you know, in many ways, like, that plan almost seems like, I don't know, meaningless in a sense. You know what I mean? And so I find myself, especially recently, and you and I have talked offline, like, I've found myself kind of reevaluating what I should be prioritizing right now in this moment. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't have the answer to that question. You know, I think in regards to, you know, what we're dealing with right now, I mean, you know, people need to get involved in their local politics as much as possible, you know, because really the changes that we desire are effectuated at the local level. You know, your mayor, your city council, you know, these are the people, especially when we're talking about police violence and police unions and, you know, police use of force policies and all those kind of things. Those things are determined really at the local level. And so, you know, we mostly have been taught to kind of pay attention to like the federal politics and the big presidential elections and all that kind of stuff. But reality is, you know, it's the local politicians who really have the most impact on your day-to-day lives in terms of these specific areas, you know. The federal government can kind of set the standard in a sense, but really it's like a conglomeration of a number of different policies that are made at the local level, you know. And so I would encourage anybody who really wants to kind of make a difference is to just start paying more attention to what's happening on the local level in your area. And then, you know, I'm thinking also just in terms of, you know, I'm a musician, and so what can I be doing? What kind of projects should I be taking on that can, you know, whether bring awareness to a certain issue or, you know, whether just to uplift the spirits of people as they're dealing with all of these heavy topics. You know what I'm saying? Music has such an immense power to do a lot of things. And so, you know, I'm thinking through different things with people, collaborators and things like that. You know, it's a fluid thing. You know, it's a fluid, it's a fluid thing.
Shane.
Yeah.
What I have two questions. I want you to answer that same question that Paul answered, right? As far as for you, you know, is there a specific is there a specific thing that you're doing, or is there anything very specific that any Black Christian, or and Christian in general, and person who cares about other people in general, is there something specific? Is there a specific way they should respond in this moment? Is there a specific way that Shane Ray Brown is responding in this moment? I forgot what my other question was, but you know, I think my other question would be, you know, maybe how do we think about protesting, and how do we think about our responses to the oppressor? And who knows, maybe that should be a second conversation, maybe next week or something like that. But at least, what do you think, you should be doing right now?
Well, I think, you know, for me, you know, I've already participated in a protest march in New York City. And, you know, I would be participating on panels in our church, in our churches, to educate, to encourage, to inspire. I'm also a part of a group called Adventists for Social Justice, and we're planning, strategizing around how we're going to address these matters. So I think for me, my personality, my training as an attorney, my personality in general, you know, is one of activism. Mm-hmm. So I have to participate in how I can, in my small way. I'm not suggesting I have any significant amount of influence, but to be one of the persons, you know, to help push some amount of change. Mm-hmm. To highlight the issue, number one, and I think what you know, the tragedy that took place certainly had one good effect, which is to highlight it. Mm-hmm. To the world, right? And then just amplify it, you know, amplifying the theories about it, amplifying the experiences that, you know, anecdotal experiences they may be, amplifying the studies around these issues, around policing, criminal justice, you know, just amplifying those things, and then participating in discussions and participating in whatever movement, whatever activism that can bring about change. And I think that involves protests, but that also involves legislative action, that involves grassroots work action, that involves reaching out to, you know, to significant corporate America who can help to push the needle. So that involves a significant amount of work. And I would want to play some role in that. Mm-hmm. I think I have to do that for myself, but I have to do that for my neighbor. Mm-hmm. I have to do that for, you know, my community. Mm-hmm. I have to do that for the future. I have to do that for what it represents to other people and places around the world who are also fighting against injustice, and look to America for some indication of what is possible in their own space. I think I have to do that for I have to do that for righteousness. I have to do it because it is right. I have to do it because I must feel a sense of indignity. A sense of indignation, rather, against the injustices that I see. And I may experience, but I certainly see and observe, and others have taught. So, but I like what Paul says. I think as an artist, you know, when he says he wants to look to see how he can impact and influence that with his art, with music. And I think that is very powerful. Everybody don't need to be doing the same thing. You know what I'm saying? We need the people who are experts in their areas. And Paul, as a musician, is an expert at grabbing the feelings and grabbing the emotion and grabbing the intensity of the situations and putting it in music in ways that will reach people that sometimes a march won't, or amplifying what a march wants to do. So I think what Paul does, what you do, Yvonne, in your space, we all need to, wherever we are, whatever talents and gifts we have been given, whatever opportunities we have, to utilize those things for positive change. There's a lot of people writing poems. One of my youngest brother actually lives in England. And he's been watching, and he wrote a poem, and he put it on Facebook with music, accompanying music and all of that. I was very proud. I was like, all right, all right, my brother. You know, he's doing his thing. And I'm like, yes, he's an actor. He's a trained actor. In his early 20s. And, you know, that's what he wants to do. And so he's using art. He's using poetry. And I think we need the poets. We need the artists. We need the sociologists and the social scientists. We need the politicians. You know, we need people with influence, maybe from sports, right? We're going to need the politicians. Mm-hmm. We need the pastors who can provide some amount of encouragement and motivation and inspiration and meaning in these moments. You know, it's going to take a collective effort. And what I'm proud of is that it seems that there are a lot of people who are finally waking up and saying, you know what, I got to do something. And what we're seeing is that a lot of people are saying, I got to march. I got to hold up a sign. But there are many others who are working behind the scene. University of Minnesota, you know, is canceling the contract with the police department. I believe there's some work being done now in Oregon, in Portland, right? Not using police in schools.
They want to
take the money where they're using for schools to get more social workers in school.
Yeah.
Right? The same thing happened in LA, I believe, or some parts of California. So these are things that people in their space, they have to, and so wherever we are, we have to help to push that progress forward. So I love what Paul says, because I can't wait to see what he comes up with that I can now, you know, pass around, and that will bring some education and some meaning and some interpretation. I'll tell you one thing. So the mayor of Newark, I forgot his name. I think it's Barack. What's the name? I'm going to tell you right now. The mayor of Newark, Ras Baraka. He just released a spoken word. He just released a spoken word. You can go to Rolling Stone and look at it.
That's right? What's up.
Right. That's what's up.
Because we're not used to seeing, you know, in essence, you know, I think what we're saying is that there are multiple ways to express and to help or assist in these situations. And I think part of the, going back to what you were saying, Paul, part of the capitalist thinking of Western culture and Western society in general is that we look for so much efficiency to the point of, you know, it's like, okay, what are you best at? Mm-hmm. Okay, only do that. Or what have you become known for? Only do that. And we often will look at a politician. This has also happened to athletes as well, where we can fall into the trap of seeing them only as monolithic individuals. And this is where, you know, LeBron James in many ways has tried to push back, you know, with, you know, talking about being more than an athlete and stuff, reminding folks that, hey guys, you know, as an athlete, yes, I make money, but that's not all there is to me. And there are other gifts and stuff that I have that are worthwhile and bring to the table to assist and help my neighbor and help my brother, you know, even do good to my enemies in various ways. You know, one of the things, as you all were speaking, and I, in the future, I want you all to feel free to pose questions to me as well. You know, I'm hosting, but everybody's allowed to ask questions or what have you. I just happen to be just putting the podcast together, but everybody has free reign to bring different things up. But I know what I'll admit, we got to wrap up soon. I don't want to keep you. I want to respect everybody's time, but I'll admit that for a little while, I wasn't really sure what my place was in this moment, you know, and it was actually through conversations with my wife, through conversations with you, Shane, the constant conversations that, you know, Paul and I always have. And, you know, a few, my boy Vic, who might be here on the podcast one of these days in the future, you know, that helped me to wrap my mind around where I fit in, because, you know, I felt like there were so many voices out there already, and I really didn't feel like there was much for me to add. And sometimes that happens because we're only looking at like the big grandiose move that can be made, you know, simply donating money is a big thing, you know, for those who maybe that's all they have at the moment, is that they may not be great articulators, you know, of what's going on, but they have resources that they can use to help those who can articulate or who can fight against. You know, so that was one way that, you know, me and my wife decided to try to make a small impact. You know, other things that I had to remember, and Paul, a friend of Paul's named Lulu, you know, I've been working with as far as some professional development stuff. And, you know, it reminded me that there's a place for simply just saying, hey, I was a professional development specialist for a while. There are a lot of African-American and Caribbean-American and, you know, other Black individuals who really haven't thought critically about what it means to apply to a job, what really goes into that at a deep level, and maybe are missing out on some economic growth of their own lives, which could then impact, you know, the community's growth if they were able to have some social mobility. And so maybe simply doing something like teaching, you know, young African-Americans and older African-Americans about, you know, how to think about a resume, how to think about a cover letter, how to think about and how do you approach your job interview. Those could be little things that, you know, seem small, but can have a major impact for an individual and eventually for the community. You know, so I've decided to start thinking about how I could begin to provide that service and resource to the Black community. You know, and then also I've been working on relaunching this apparel brand that I had done. And originally it had been centered years ago when I first started all this, it was just centered on motivation. And since then, you know, I haven't done much with it, but I've decided to relaunch it as a Christian apparel brand. And it was so funny because within that, I already had a plan to have like some social justice themes aspect of the gospel in there. But this incident with George Floyd actually has motivated me to produce some of those things first. Yeah. You know, whereas I was going to kind of produce some of those things a little bit later on, because I know that for me, shirts have always been one of those things where I can say something without physically having to say something. And so I figured, you know, maybe something as simple as a shirt for those who don't feel like they have a voice, they'd be able to at least wear something that expresses some of the sentiments that they have. And also that, you know, that would be me, you know, learning the skills of entrepreneurship in hopes that, you know, I could then pass that knowledge on to other Black individuals in the community about how do you do business? How do you do entrepreneurship? And how do we create for ourselves? You know, that's still another area where we have struggled with. Not that everybody has to do that. There's still value in being an employee, but there is another type of value as well being able to create a product. And take an idea, have an original idea, and be able to sell that idea and leverage that idea into something bigger and greater and expand it. So that being said, you know, I think what we want to encourage everybody who's listening this week to do is you have something. You don't have to do much. You might not be able to do any of the things that we talked about. It might be as simple as, you know, reading stories to young Black individuals. It might be as simple as, who knows, helping an older Black individual across the street with their groceries. But you can find some type of way to pour into your Black neighbor, your weaker neighbor. And I don't mean that weaker in terms of weak in terms of them as people, but those who have been, you know, historically oppressed into a position of weakness. And there will always be somebody that we can consider a weaker brother. And it is our job to use the power, the privilege that we have on behalf of the weaker brother and not to use that power at the expense of that weaker brother. You know, I'll end with this. In Acts chapter 2, one of the things that we hear of and we see is an example of what it looks like when everybody has and holds all things in common. And it says that nobody had lack because those who had were willing to share with those who didn't have, to the point where everybody ended up having. There was nobody who had lack, man. And, you know, it'd be amazing to see if we could get to that point one day where we look at the United States and nobody has lack, you know. So that being said, I don't know if there's anything that you all wanted to say, but if not, we'll wrap up and call that episode 1 of Can't Be Hid.
Yes, sir. Well said.
That being said, man, you all, until I see you all again, have a good night. You know, City on the Hill, Can't Be Hid, y'all. Average is failure. You know, the gospel is still the best solution that we have for the problems of the world today. So if you have a chance, go ahead and dig in. I'm out of here. Peace. You know, man.